Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour. It is October 24th, 2013, and a very interesting development this week. A comet, an old comet, that came alive unexpectedly, brightened to about, well, I'm still making estimates, but nearly the size of the sun, the coma. Now understand, the comet is made up of a couple parts. It has the nucleus, which is relatively small, and then the coma, which is the gaseous plasma region around the comet that we actually see. Well, the coma part, the gaseous coma part, expanded tremendously this past week on a comet called C2010X1. That's C2010X1. Which was thought to have disintegrated and gone away back in 2011, October 2011. It started breaking up in August 2011, and eventually just became invisible from observation using even large telescopes. So they just figured it had gone away. But oddly enough, this past that'd be the 23rd, 22nd, 21st, this past Monday, it just exploded into brightness, and is being reported by amateurs as being near naked eye visible. The other thing that's very interesting about this comet is it's at about twice the distance of the planet Jupiter from the sun. So this is a very unusual situation. I have to get a kick out of standard science as they fumble around to try and explain these various cometary phenomena, because just weeks ago, a guy named Kerry Liss, the head of the Dream Team, NASA ISON Dream Team, to present Tier 2 information to the public about Comet ISON, was saying that there was a so-called frost line around the orbit of the planet Mars, which of course is way closer to the sun than Jupiter, and that around this so-called frost line, that's where comets would become active. So they were waiting for Comet ISON to cross that and become active. This particular comet is twice the distance to Jupiter, and all of a sudden explodes into brightness. And of course, the standard explanation is that, oh, there must have been sunlight found a fissure of where ice and water was contained, and it came out. Well, it's an absolutely absurd explanation, because at that distance from the sun, the sunlight is about as bright as a candle at about 5 miles distance. There's just simply no energy there. And so for the comet to explode into brightness because all of a sudden the sun found some fissure, it certainly is just absolutely absurd. But the other thing that's absurd is the symmetry. Like Comet Holmes, which a number of years ago exploded into brightness due to an electrical alignment in the solar system, which I had predicted, by the way, this comet, everybody had completely forgotten about it because they just figured it all went away. But this comet actually fragmented back in August of 2011. So, as I said, nobody even imagined that it was even there anymore. Just a second, I'm adjusting some sound here in the studio. Okay, so anyway, I'm going to describe what exactly happened here, and there's some very other interesting reactions that actually are slightly affecting Earth weather. And so I'll talk about this chain of events. So let's look at the brightening. It's October 21st, 2013, Comet C2010X1. Brightens greatly. It is obviously an electrical connection with the planet Jupiter. But now what's interesting, it's not a linear. A lot of times when things are close to the sun, we look at near linear alignments to talk about predictions, but the solar wind does not go out linearly from the sun. It swings out in kind of a curveball fashion, like a left braking curveball, so to speak, as it leaves the sun. So the comet actually got past the linear alignment with Jupiter quite a ways. The comet's orbit always was near the ecliptic, that is the orbital plane of the planets, and so it does remain very closely aligned with the planets. Additionally, little comet Ison on Monday the 21st was announced, developed a fan-like sunward spike. Now, it had already developed a sunward spike. Now I'm talking about comet Ison, which it's working its way in towards the sun. On Monday, it was announced that comet Ison was developing a broad sunward spike. And, of course, the fairy tale science tries to explain this as a jet of ice coming out of the nucleus. And I put a posting on my webpage, and I said, well, of course, that doesn't explain what we're seeing, because this jet just only points towards the sun. That's the sunward spike. That's the electron beam that comes out from the sun in the overall planetary discharge or cometary discharge in the plasma discharge comet model. That's my comet model that I proposed many years ago in the late 1970s. And it explains everything we're seeing here. If this were a tumbling ice ball, then that jet would be flowing around and spinning around on comet Ison. And then the same is true of the comet that I started talking about initially, C2010X1. They're talking about a fissure in the comet nucleus. And, of course, NASA doesn't see this. They just talk about this like it were gospel truth. But oddly enough, I mentioned this on a show, was it last week? I was talking about symmetry. I was continuing my discussion of symmetry. And by the way, that's the main science for tonight. I'll be talking about the ongoing issues about my new release. That's the main science topic. But I had to give an update on this comet C2010X1 because it's so vitally important. If the comet nucleus were an ice ball and spinning like it would typically be, they're not stationary. They don't just sit there relative to the sun. They actually tumble and spin. Then how would you explain the great symmetry? Now, the comet C2010X1 is a big, very symmetrical ball of haze. In a ice ball scenario, if there was a newly found fissure with ice and water and it came jetting out, that jet would be spinning around, and that would be obvious in any observations, but that's not the case. The coma is a beautiful circular, spherical, very homogeneous, very evenly distributed, symmetrical coma. And that's what I said last week. I just made a side note as I was talking about symmetries in the universe. I said that's one of the reasons that disproves the Dirty Snowball Comet model, because it can't explain a symmetry. And a lot of times in mathematics and in physics, we take general principles like symmetry to discount theories that don't add up. The Dirty Snowball Comet model cannot explain the symmetry found in the comet tail. Now, originally, remember that the original ice ball comet model that came out of 1950s space science and astronomy, they believed that the center core object was white and snowy, pure white, and that's what they were expecting. And then, of course, when they got closer to when they measured and actually took photos of the comet Halley's nucleus back in 1986, they realized that this is the blackest thing in the universe. It was at that time Halley's nucleus, the nucleus of Halley's comet, was the darkest thing, the blackest thing ever discovered in the solar system. So they quick had to go back and invent this idea that fissures in the surface were where the water was contained. Well, complete fairy tale science, and that's where everything broke down, because then a lot of things were lost. For example, how do you explain the symmetry in the comet Coma, which they tried to explain before by this nice, even white snowball? And of course, when you go out and measure it, there is no such thing. It's black, it's hot, it's got a tarry surface, hydrocarbons on the surface, and there's no water or ice to be found. So to continue this charade of the Dirty Snowball Comet model in spaceweather.com and through all of standard science that filters down through these amateurs, who, by the way, are posting, the only postings of Comet Ison, of pictures, are just fuzzy, out of focus. I mean, you could do just about as well with an old Nikon flip phone camera. The pictures are terrible. They're out of focus. They don't show any detail, and that's what they're posting as the picture of the day of Comet Ison. Just absurd. Absolutely absurd. But at any rate, the symmetry in this comet, C2010X1, is like Comet Holmes. The Comet Holmes was a comet that all of a sudden exploded into brightness due to electrical alignments with the planets, the inner planets. And I have a sub-page on my homepage dealing with Comet Holmes, so be sure to go read that if you have forgotten about Comet Holmes, spelled H-O-L-M-E-S. That's on my webpage, jmccsci.com. You can go read about Comet Holmes and that whole issue. And so this new comet looks the same. It's very bright, and back in the Comet Holmes days, the NASA explanation was, oh, an asteroid hit it. I mean, where do these people come up with this garbage that all of a sudden, magically, something hits it and develops this perfectly big symmetrical coma? It is so beyond absurd. And then it stays that way for weeks and months. If something had hit it with an ice ball, you might get a little wisp of extra activity for an hour or a day, or, well, give them the benefit of the doubt, maybe a couple days, but not for weeks and months, as we observed. And it certainly wouldn't give a symmetric, beautifully symmetric, homogeneous coma like we observe. So just from those basic principles of symmetry, of homogeneity of the comet coma, you can show that the Dirty Snowball model cannot be correct. But oddly enough, and a lot of people have studied my books, see my original drawings back in the appendix of the, for example, the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, the appendix of my original papers that came out of my late 1970s work, those drawings perfectly exemplify what we're seeing here with the symmetry due to the electric fields, the combined electric field of the sun and the comet nucleus. And of course, it's more complicated than that, because the solar wind contains electromagnetic field, and you have to include those localized effects. But basically, the prediction was for a beautifully symmetrical comet coma. And of course, the sunward spike and all of the other interactions that come with the planets. Now, other things, this is the interesting part of comet C2010X1. It actually had an interaction. Well, I talked about the interaction with Jupiter, and I briefly mentioned the interaction with comet Ison. On the 21st, comet Ison became very excited and developed a fan-shaped sunward spike. Also, on the 21st of October, the sun had three very powerful high number M-class flares, like M9. So basically, almost X-class flare activity, which is the highest activity on the sun. But still pretty low activity for the solar maximum that we're supposedly in. But this has been the biggest solar activity for months. Even though like a small comet crashed into the sun a couple weeks ago, caused some minor solar flaring, which also affected Earth, but the only solar flaring we've seen has been the direct result of comet interactions. And of course, this is unmentioned, unknown about in standard science. So at any rate, the comet C2010 S or X1 has an interaction with Jupiter, expands greatly. This causes a discharge to go all the way through the solar system, connecting with comet Ison in the inner solar system, which is connecting with the sun now, and sending off a series of high-digit M-class flares. And now these flares today, as I produce this radio show, those flares are hitting Earth. So in the next day, couple evenings, go out to see the Aurora Borealis. Now, understand that all of this started because of a comet that was thought to have been completely defunct, comet C2010X1. So this is the very, very interesting part of this. And of course, the comet is out way beyond the orbit of Jupiter, where comets should, where dirty snowballs should have no business developing comet tails, let alone expanding into brightness up to the size, almost the physical size of the sun for the comet Coma, the gaseous part. So very, very interesting. And the other interesting part is, even with very powerful telescopes, back in 2011 when this comet so-called disappeared, they couldn't even see the nucleus. Now they can see minor planets, so the nucleus of this object is extremely small, very small. And so I suspect it's very black, so it does not reflect much sunlight. But that's probably part of the reason why they lost track of it. But that shows how big an effect, in terms of the plasma discharge comet model, that shows how big an effect of gathering atmosphere and coma the comet can be. It shows how, what a major effect the comet can, a small nucleus can produce in the if given the right solar conditions and electrical alignments, etc. So once again, the comet C2010X1 linear aligns with Jupiter. That extends this current sheet down into the region where comet Ison is, now well within the orbit of Mars. That interacts with the sun. The sun kicks out a series of M-class flares, and right now we're seeing that aurora activity. This is huge. And of course, like I say, standard science, totally oblivious. Any weather reporting, totally oblivious. And so then I did a little research. I said, okay, let's go back and take a closer look at comet C2010X1 and its orbit and where it was. It turns out that on September 26, 2011, let me just verify that date here in my notes, just a second. Yes, that's correct. It's September 26, 2011. So this is during the epoch when the comet is supposedly disintegrating. The comet is directly between Earth and the sun. So at any rate, I looked up the weather for that period, and lo and behold, the United States had a himmicane, a fairly significant himmicane rolling across the Midwest. On the 26th, that low pressure cell was centered on the city of about Chicago. And the spiral arms of the himmicane, which is an overland hurricane, basically, that low center pressure cell centered on the city of Chicago. And the arms extended out as far as the Gulf Coast of Mexico, and then far north into the provincial states of Canada, and then continued to move on easterly for a number of days. And of course, standard science back then, I looked at the explanations for weather that were given to the public, and it just fairy tale science once again. The weather reporting is just absurd, because it doesn't explain what is causing the weather. It's like Weather just happens. Oh, today it's raining. Today it's sunny. Oh, there's wind today. There's no explanation understood in standard meteorology for why weather happens. There's no connection. It's just like, oh, well, the wind is such and such, or it has a certain direction, and there's no understanding of how solar conditions, and especially electrical solar conditions, feed into our weather systems here on Earth. And that's what a lot of my work involves, is the weather work, showing how the solar conditions feed down into our weather systems, how it drives hurricanes, tornadic systems, cyclonic systems, typhoons, etc. And once those connections establish with the cloud systems all the way out to outer space and then down to Earth, those systems then are basically dragged along by the electrical currents and interactions magnetically with our Earth's magnetic field. That's kind of a mouthful for many people, so here's an example. A hurricane moves westerly across the equatorial region of Earth out in the Atlantic Ocean, and the typhoons out in the Pacific the same. But why did they move westerly? Because in that region of the world, the jet stream is actually electrons up in the upper atmosphere. But what's going on? As this electrical discharge occurs, you can show, using what is known as the right-hand rule, you can show that the force on the electrical current in the hurricane is what pushes it to the west. In other words, the electrical current acting on Earth's magnetic field, which is central to the hurricane, pushes the hurricane westerly, and that's why hurricanes move to the west. And if you're in doubt about this, you can do a little basic physics, look up the right-hand rule, and understand that the electrical current that drives the hurricane is interacting with Earth's magnetic field and pushes the hurricane westerly. That's what the cloud systems that are the thunderstorm cloud systems. I'm just going to switch gears here a little bit as we move towards the end of the hurricane season. We're now late in October, and basically we have not had a hurricane season, which is very interesting because at the beginning of the year, the National Hurricane Prediction Center said we would have an above-average hurricane season. And it's been anything but that. There really has not been any hurricane activity, and that's what I had predicted originally, is that there wouldn't be any hurricane season. I said there's no reason for it. There's no physical reason for hurricanes to develop because the sun is so weak. The sun is so low on energy that we're just going to have a weak hurricane season. The only typhoon activity we had was about a week ago, and that was due to the fact that Earth was actually earlier in the month of October when Earth was interacting with the electrical results of Comet Ison interacting with the planet Mars. All of these interactions and weather interactions with the planet Earth, all of them have been the result of cometary activity. But then, of course, if you look at the reasons for weather, like I say, it's just gobbledygook. It just basically, the weather happened. This is what happened. It's weather reporting. They report what happened, and they have no predictive ability because how can you predict the weather if you don't know what causes the weather? That, in fact, is the title of one of the chapters, I believe, in the Atlantis to Tesla book. So at any rate, it's very interesting to see the new comet, not new comet, the old, you might say old new comet, C2010X1, affecting the inner part of the solar system, even though it's far beyond the orbit of Jupiter, affecting the sun, and then that affecting Earth. So it's a chain reaction, and as I say, standard science, clueless. Okay, the next topic Okay, I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. A very interesting piece of information coming in the other day from a listener, and for a listener from Australia, a person who has studied my work, obviously. And here's what the situation is. In Australia, recently, there have been some severe wildfires out in the outback. And the above the wildfires, clouds form. Clouds, just like rain clouds. But the interesting thing is that these rain clouds, which many times do not rain, they look like rain clouds, but they develop lightning, and the lightning goes ahead. It actually pushes ahead of the physical fire on the ground, creating fires ahead because of the lightning ahead of the lightning that moves ahead in the storm system, and the clouds moves ahead of the actual fire on the ground, causing more fires. And so this is a very interesting phenomenon. So I want to read a little bit here from this particular report. Okay, so I'm going to read from first the email and then from the actual report. Okay, so this is a recent email from a listener. It says, "Hi, Professor McCanny. You may have heard of the large brush fires burning east of the Blue Mountains west of Sydney." This is in Australia. It says, "I was listening," this is the listener, the person writing the email, writing in saying, "I was listening to the Australian ABC News 24 station yesterday and heard a very interesting interview with Dr. Andrew Sullivan, a leading brushfire behavior researcher with the one of the Commonwealth Scientific Industrial Organization, Australia's National Science Agency. In the interview, Dr. Sullivan stated that fire clouds can form over very large brush fires, and from these clouds, lightning has been observed striking the ground in front of the fire, which ignites and advances the fire front. It says from the website, it says it's a cloud formed by the presence of the fire. While the clouds typically did not contain enough water to rain and extinguish the fire, under certain conditions, they generate lightning. In some cases, the lightning has hit the ground downwind of the fire and started a new fire." Dr. Sullivan stated in the interview that Blue Mountains residents witnessed lightning striking the ground from the fire cloud. "You may have also heard of a massive brush fires in Melbourne, Victoria, from a few years ago." And this person is recounting what he saw from an airplane. It says, "I flew into Melbourne on that Black Saturday and watched in awe as the fire cloud had formed into a massive thunderstorm above the fire. And I have witnessed this lightning striking both the ground and striking above the cloud into the upper atmosphere. The aircraft was about 15,000 feet. When we flew under the cloud on our descent to landing, at that time I had no appreciation of what was really happening. Obviously, Tier 2 science wants us to believe that friction causes lightning to jump outside the battery. Thanks to you, we know that the fire cloud or column of ionized atmosphere merely represents a path of least resistance for the electrical charge in the ionosphere to discharge to Earth." And so then he found this article, which is posted in the Sydney Herald. And so at any rate, it's talking about it shows a picture of an extreme fire, and it shows the upwelling of the currents, the air currents, and then the wind blowing the cloud, this tremendous cloud that forms in front of the fire, and then the lightning. And so here's an excerpt from the article. It says, a bizarre weather phenomenon known as fire cloud is likely to form over the fire raging between Lithgow and Bilpin if weather continues conditions deteriorate from Tuesday as predicted, say the fire analysts. The unique weather phenomena, also called a pyrocumulus, occurs when a large fire is coupled with an unstable atmosphere. Rural fire spokesperson Natalie Sanders said the state mine fire, which stretches across more than 42,000 hectares, had generated a pyrocumulus. And so we're more familiar, by the way, with cumulonimbus and other types of cloud formations, but this is called pyrocumulus. In other words, accumulation of clouds due to fire. And said it had generated pyrocumulus last Thursday, and similar unstable conditions were forecast for Wednesday. And then it says under the photo, it says lightning generated by fire and fire tornadoes are all phenomena that may be witnessed as the fires continue to rage across the Blue Mountains. But it's interesting, super interesting, in this caption of the photo where they talk about fire tornadoes. And that's really interesting because the lightning doesn't just come down and snap in form of a lightning. It comes in lightning tornadoes, it says. Now, how do weather systems cause this? Well, this is the same as I've talked about the creation of lightning in around tornadoes, because they're driven by the same electrical discharge from the ionosphere. And then the article goes on to say, if these fires are still going strong, there's potential for that to happen again. Andrew Sullivan, a leading brush fire behavior researcher, said the phenomena required a fire generating a significant amount of heat. As it burned, the hot air it released would rise into column into the atmosphere. As air moved upwards, it was quickly replaced by cooler air, a process known as convection column. In very large brush fires, these hot air columns would be enormous and rise high into the atmosphere, carrying large amounts of water vapor. One of the main combustion products of fire is actually water, just like in your automobile. And then it says, an unstable atmosphere meant that the column could rise higher and higher into the atmosphere, where the temperature was cool enough for the water vapor to condense into a pyrocumulus cloud. It's cloud formed by the presence of the fire. While the clouds typically did not contain enough water to rain and extinguish the fire, under certain conditions they could generate lightning. Now, just understand that the cloud itself, this is my comment, the cloud itself is not generating lightning. It is forming the finger that goes up that connects into the vertical electric field, which causes an electrical discharge that comes down from the ionosphere, and that is the effect they're seeing. But they, as with any Tier 2 science, are unaware of the real cause of electric energy here. And as I've stated many times on the show before, the electrical discharge is just part of the overall electrical circuit of the Earth. And so I'm going to continue reading this article. It's rather interesting to see the twist that gets put on this. It says it's a cloud. This is reading from the article again. It says it's a cloud formed by the presence of the fire. In some cases, the lightning has hit the ground downwind of the fire and started new fire. For a large convection column to form, significant amount of heat needed to be released from the fire, a process that was released to the amount and rate of fire burned through fuel. While extensive fires with large convection columns could generate strong winds, they did not change the behavior or the direction of the fire. There is confusion where people think a fire has gotten so big that it's created its own weather and it can do whatever it wants. Well, it doesn't, he says. A fire will still follow the laws of physics and move in the direction of the prevailing wind that is driving it. But under certain circumstances, fires can generate vortices like tornadoes with very high wind speeds that could cause significant damage. And of course, here, this is a guy who's an atmospheric scientist, well versed in tier two garbage fairy tale science, thinking that the fire is generating the tornado, which is very strange, because he had just got done saying that the fire did not generate weather. And then he says, but the fire generates could generate vortices or fire tornadoes. Okay, so he thinks that the fire is causing the tornadoes. Well, here's the entire process, and of course this goes back to my weather work and my concepts of plasma discharge comet model and the Earth, in fact, discharging the solar capacitor, that okay, so here's exactly what's happened. The fire burns, generates the vertical column of hot gases that rise up. And as this guy states, water is a byproduct of the fire. The O2 is generated in the fire. As it burns the carbon, it becomes carbon dioxide and water. That's the same result that happens when you burn hydrocarbons in your automobile. One of the byproducts is water coming out the exhaust, which you can see coming out of the exhaust pipe of cars on a cold day. So the same is true with a forest fire or a brush fire. Okay, so anyway, this rises as it hits the cooler upper air in the atmosphere. It condenses out and forms water, small water droplets. So that's where the visible cloud comes from. But then here's where my physics differs from standard tier 2 physics, or science, fairy tale science, I should say. What I say is that the vertical column then, and these are high, as the one listener said in his email, he was coming down under the cloud at 15,000 feet. So these are clouds that extend way up, probably 50,000 feet or more, just like a thunderstorm cloud. And so that is like a finger sticking up in the vertical electric field of Earth. It starts to discharge from the ionosphere down. And that's where the lightning comes from. That's where the tornado comes from, because what happens is it starts, because of the fire and because of the electrical current that's now flowing, it ionizes the gases at the surface of the Earth, and they become part of the electrical circuit, rushing upwards much faster than the fire would normally cause them to move, causing the tornado. And the spinning action is the vortex action that happens, just like water falling down a drain will move in a vortex. The Coriolis force working on the upward or downward moving molecules. And so in the case of the tornado, they're being sucked up the column by the electrical current is actually creating the vacuum. And then, of course, that pulls more oxygen at the base to fuel the fire. So the tornadoes are actually an electrical condition that is enhanced by the presence of the fire. But do you see the subtle difference between what I'm saying is happening and the guy here, Dr. Sullivan, who's well-versed in Tier 2 science? He first states that the fire cannot cause weather, but at the very end of the article contradicts himself by saying the fire could generate vortices or fire tornadoes. And that these fire tornadoes could cause significant damage. So we're talking about high velocity, high wind tornadoes. Before I get into the main science topic today, there's a couple of noteworthy news topics that just came in before the show. Here is one dealing with GMO issues that have just come out. Here is one that 3 days ago, Mexico banned genetically engineered corn. And this is a topic that I talked about when I had my corn distribution project a number of years ago that was ongoing for a number of years as I distributed non-GMO corn seed. Anyway, 3 days ago, a judge in Mexico ruled that effective immediately, no genetically engineered corn can be planted in Mexico. This means that companies like Monsanto will no longer be allowed to plant or sell their corn within the country's borders. And this is important because corn originated in Mexico. The corn that we know today from a small grain beginning many, who knows how many tens of thousands of years ago, the corn that we know today is a variation of that that has been genetically selected, which is a natural process. But the Monsanto monster corn cannot be sold or planted within the borders of Mexico. So that's a huge, huge gain for all of us. And then it says also the county council for the island of Kauai, which is one of the Hawaiian islands, passed a law that mandates that farms disclose pesticide use and the presence of genetically modified crops. So at any rate, they have to identify and keep buffers around any genetically modified food. Here's another one. It says that the Big Island of Hawaii gave preliminary approval to a bill that prohibits open-air cultivation, propagation, development, or testing of genetically engineered crops or plants. So that's another huge gain for all of us. And this, actually, this email that came in from a listener is extensive. It goes on and on about money laundering from Pepsi-Cola, Coca-Cola, Nestle USA, General Mills, etc., that they finally got caught laundering money, putting into political systems to try and prevent labeling of genetically modified food. So at any rate, that just in, another email just in from a listener showing a document that has been around for a long time. It's actually a warfare against the public document, which is stating that they have basically weapons using electromagnetic frequency waves that can control the public, basically dumb down and neutralize the public. At any rate, and then there's another email just in that NASA has a mission developed to send a high-velocity projectile into an asteroid. So in a number of things going on here, I'll look into those a little deeper and possibly have a better report for you next week. Okay, the main science topic, finally getting to it this week, but a lot of important topics that I covered this week, things that came up and just had to discuss. Oh yes, something else that's important. My show next week will no longer be on the summertime 9350 frequency. It'll move back to the wintertime frequency on WWCR at 5.070 megahertz starting next week. So make a note of that. Change your radio, and this is only valid on the Thursday evening show. The Friday night and Saturday morning airing of the show will be the same, will not change. WTWW does not change their frequency. So only on the Thursday evening show, if that's where you listen, Thursday evening, 6 p.m. Central Time, the show will air on 5.070 megahertz. And that happens because I'm right on the cusp of the day and nighttime frequencies, the show being at 6 p.m. So as we move into winter time, the nighttime frequency of 5.070 works better. So the first few weeks are a little less quality, but as we move into winter, it will become better. So anyway, make a note on your calendar. Next week's show, starting the 27th of, or I'm sorry, the that would be the 31st, would be Halloween night, October 31st. My show will air on 5.070 megahertz. Also, I wanted to make aware there are YouTube videos and other web pages, posting every little thing that goes on in the earth, and they're making statements that it's caused by Nibiru, or this is evidence that Planet X is here. And I want you to understand that Earth has never been a very wonderful place to live in terms of violent natural events. The South Pacific, Asia, Southeast Asia has always had typhoons, severe weather. The volcanoes that erupt around the Earth have been going on for thousands of years. Actually, the heavy volcanic activity goes back to the Holocene period, when the comet Venus came through and really shook up Earth. That's when the heavy volcanic activity that we're seeing through the last thousands of years actually began. Prior to that, the atmosphere was different, Earth's atmosphere was different, and the volcanic activity was different. We did not have rainbows. There was a marked note in history in all civilizations where they note that the rainbow did not exist prior to those events, so the atmospheric conditions were very different at that time. So what my point is beware of websites. And I know people get hooked into these and they go, oh my goodness, look at this severe weather in the South Pacific or whatever they're looking at. The reality is that recently we've had very mild weather. The sun has not been very powerful, except when we've had cometary activity that's caused it. And don't quote me as saying that only comets cause solar flares. That's not true. You have to look at the overall conditions, but the solar conditions are very weak these days. And it's actually been true recently, only recently, that comets have been the only spur or incentive for the sun to kick up and put out a lot of extra energy. So at any rate, but beware of sites that quote all kinds of things going around on around the world. And it's just more reporting is making people more aware of these events, but it does not in any stretch of the imagination prove that Planet X is here or something. Don't get caught up into that fear-mongering that's going on that people use for attention. But remember that most of that, the vast majority of that, is put out by the disinformation crew to desensitize the public over the real issues of the Planet X topic. And once again, there are many, many Planet X objects. One of them had some historical significance, but there's a lot of confusion about that because of the Venus event, where Venus became a planet. Well, if Venus became a planet, it's not out there to come back again. And so this whole idea of the 3,600-year orbit, simply not correct. And by the way, the misuse of my name keeps growing on the Internet, especially with YouTube. Once again, only look at my webpage for what I am saying. People cutting little clips of my voice or past videos and then mixing it with other material is just rampant. And there's certainly no way to control it because YouTube is complicit in this misinformation campaign, trying to destroy my work, trying to destroy my name. So, and by the way, Comet Ison is not Planet X. It's not Nibiru. It does not have a mini solar system associated with it, and on. So I've actually kept a posting up on my page to inform the public about what I do say and what I don't say. So once again, don't go to YouTube for information. People keep sending things in. Oh, but this guy has good information. Well, yeah, a lot of people have good information, but they're trying to hype it up like something special or something different is going on today. And it's not true. Earth has always been a difficult place to live. Look at Krakatoa back in the 1800s exploding, causing worldwide weather changes. And massive tsunamis around the Southeast Asian China Sea area. you know, the world has always been a difficult place to live in. In the United States, we've been relatively free from this type of activity. The Philippines recently had immense earthquakes and the big typhoon issues in Vietnam. But those things have been happening for thousands of years. So don't get caught in this idea that somebody on YouTube is posting all kinds of earth changes and that that is somehow indicative that we have a much more violent earth today. No, it's just more reporting. We did not have that kind of that level of reporting in the past. Okay, so enough of that. But just a second. Also, I'll probably talk about this next week, but I thought it was comical. I get a magazine called Physics Today. It's a magazine that goes out to people who have credentials in the field of physics. And the main article, now you all know that last spring I put out an article called Comets, or a book called Comets. It's in ebook format on my webpage, jmccsci.com. And the oddly enough, humorously enough, the main article in Physics Today for this, the October issue, is called Comets, completely copying my book title, and then it's a Gee Whiz Tier 2 series of articles. And remember that a lot of this, like in Physics Today, in this level of magazine, is for the so-called educated, but basically Tier 2 level scientist. And so I want to read one of the statements here. In the first part it says, the processes that determine which field lines loop back into the sun and can hold in the million degree gases and which ones are forced open with the heliosphere, the region of space through which the solar wind extends, remain poorly understood. Now, I'll talk about this whole article more next week. But the first thing out of the chute is they say, we don't know anything about how the solar corona, which is millions of degrees, it sits outside of the sun, it's million degree electrons, which means they're relativistic electrons racing around the sun. They have no idea where the energy comes from to produce these, nor what maintains them in place, because if it were simply gravity, those babies would be flying out of there like Johnny B. Good at the speed of light. So what maintains relativistic electrons around the sun? Well, it's a superatom. This is what I've explained in my work, that the sun is an electrical engine. The inside part of the sun has a positive charge. The outside is the relativistic electron. So basically you have a fusion engine up high in the atmosphere of the sun, and charge separation is part of the process. And then when the electron screen, it's like a physical screen, when the protons come blasting out from a nuclear explosion, a fusion explosion in the atmosphere, the positive charged particles are drawn up to the screen of electrons, which opens up and they come shooting out. And that's what we call the solar wind. That's kind of a verbal explanation of the physics of what's going on. But in standard science, since they don't admit to, and they cannot admit to, electric fields, they have no way of explaining how the physics of this works. Yet they're trying to use sun-grazing comets, including Comet Lovejoy, to try and convince you that comets are dirty snowballs. So it's really a Gee Whiz Tier 2 fairy tale science article for Tier 2 educated scientists that goes all the way up to people teaching in universities and other levels. This same magazine about a year or two ago had a professor in thermodynamics from MIT write an article saying that hurricanes form from warm water. Another Tier 2 Gee Whiz article, but in no place in the article did he explain where the vast amount of energy in a hurricane comes from, how it can possibly come from warm water, or how you can go from a placid warm ocean and drive energy from that system into a violent, rotating, high energy 200 mile an hour hurricane. So anyway, just like I say, fairy tale science for the tier two level of scientists out there to propagate the garbage that then filters down to you, the public. Okay, this leaves me about 6 minutes, 5 minutes here to talk about the main science topic, but I'll be discussing this. This release should be coming up soon, very complicated. But let me just say this. Last week I was talking about symmetries and other properties of the universe. There's a great need, so to summarize this week's main science topic, there's a great need within us to organize things, to organize nature, to organize what we see. For example, just basically letter systems to organize into words and thoughts. That sets us apart from animals who communicate with a series of grunts and noises. We have a very complex word sentence structure that can describe, we can describe just about anything, and then use our hands to design machines that can create just about anything. And so that's what sets us apart from a dog or a cat or a deer or a snake or a bug, you know, that we can change our environments. So anyway, the ability and the natural desire to organize into neat composite forms is a, it's a basic property of the human nature. And so this is something that I have done. I've been working a long time on a type of organization. And so the new release, this is one of the biggest hints I have given so far. I've talked about pillars and arches in church architecture. I've talked about symmetry. I've talked about many other things in nature. But our ability to organize, and that's something that I've done in much of my work, is organize and put into a very new structure all of my work on the conditions in the sun, which eventually cause comets or earth weather, all of those effects. It's an organization of a lot of information and then organizing it into a fashion that the average person on the street can understand. So I have completed a tremendous organization of something that really needed that type of organization. And so this will be of great interest to everybody. Scientists and lay people alike will be very interested in this tremendous amount of organization that I'm going to present, both physical and I won't say any more about what it deals with. But the new release deals with an organization of information. Remember, as we head into the holiday seasons, do your Christmas and holiday shopping on my webpage, where things really count. People will very much appreciate what you get for them, because you can order it and send it to anybody that you want. So remember the webpage, jmccsci.com. That's JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.